Hare Krishna. So today morning we are continuing our discussion on the understanding the Ras Leela. In yesterday's session I talked about how Krishna is calling the gopis to paradharma, to focus completely on devoting oneself to Krishna. At the same time he does not reject aparadharma. That means the duties which we have in this world are not to be rejected. So I'll continue this theme today and we'll discuss what is it that unifies, harmonizes para and aparadharma. But before we go into that, let's look at the narrative of the pastime. So Krishna calls the gopis and then he asks them, why have you come here? How did you come to look at the beautiful trees, at the beautiful Vrindavan forest? If so, you're seen in it, now go back. It's not safe for you to be here. It's not appropriate for you to be alone here in the forest. You have duties to your family. And then the gopis, a very beautiful reply, they say, Krishna, you are the Lord of our Lord. You are the husband of our husband. You are the one for whom everyone lives. And for your sake, we have left everything. And we have come and surrendered to you. How can we go back? So, gopis fervently appeal to Krishna. They describe very attractively his beauty, his potency, his divinity. And thus they say that they are actually not going to go back. On seeing the resolve, Krishna is pleased. And being very pleased, Krishna, initially when the gopis come, there's one Krishna, and there are many gopis who are rushing. And the gopis reply to Krishna's talks. And then Krishna is pleased with the determination and he starts preparing to perform the rasa dance with him. And when he's performing the rasa dance, Krishna expands. Krishna has the potency by which he can expand as much as he wants. So Krishna starts expanding more and more. Innumerable forms there are. So many gopis over there, and Krishna manifests along with all those gopis. Kalavenuravavashyagopavadhu Chatakoti vritatsmara koti samat Prativallavikabhimatatsukhadat Vasudeva sutana param kalaye. The Venkatesh Suprabhatam, this beautiful verse was describes that how Kalavenuravavashya, by the sweet sound of his flute, the gopis' hearts became conquered. Vasha, they became conquered, overpowered. Gopavadhu, the gopis. Shatakoti vritat smarakoti samat. There are hundreds and thousands and millions of gopis who came there. And Krishna's beauty was such that it superseded the beauty of millions of cupids. Koti vritat, koti samat. So koti refers to 1 crore. So there are so many gopis, and one Krishna, his beauty exceeded the beauty of all those gopis. At the same time, exceeded the beauty of millions of cupids. And then that one Krishna expanded into innumerable forms to perform pastimes with each of the gopis, to make every gopi feel that actually, thank you, to make every gopi feel that Krishna is personally with her. And thus he satisfied the hearts of every one of the gopi. Prativallavikabhimatat sukhadat. With each gopi he granted immense happiness to the heart of each gopi, sukhadat. And to such a wonderful Lord, Vasudeva kala, Vasudeva sutana param kalaye. And there is no Lord whom I can worship like this wonderful Lord Vasudeva. He was the son of Vasudeva. Na param kalaye, such a wonderful Lord. He reciprocates with every one of the gopis. And similarly, he reciprocates with every single devotee. Now, as Krishna was about to perform the rasa dance with the gopis, And as they were moving forward in this leela, the gopis suddenly saw that, oh, Krishna is with me. And Krishna arranged by his yogamaya potency for the gopis to see Krishna, not only for his form to be manifested, but each gopi felt Krishna is with me. And thus the gopis started feeling a little proud. So when this happened, that Krishna was with the gopis, and then when they became mother, as it is described in this verse, anantar dhiyat, then immediately the Lord disappeared. So this is the last verse of this chapter, and it is a cliffhanger ending, we could say, to this chapter. That just when the lover and the beloved have united, they've just come together, at that moment, one of them disappears. And frantic anxiety with which the gopis will search for Krishna, will beg from various objects in Vrindavan for the directions to Krishna, that will be described in the next chapter. And we'll discuss that over there. But this theme, and we will discuss more about why Krishna disappeared also. But at this point, let's focus on this theme that the gopis gave up everything for Krishna and then Krishna gave them up. Now, why was that? The reason over here given is the gopis became proud. For Krishna's pastimes, there can be multiple levels of reasons. The external reason, there is an internal reason. So the internal reason, we'll discuss in tomorrow's class on the occasion of Radha Ashtami. But let's focus on the external reason that is mentioned over here, that pride. Now, words have different connotations in different contexts. Nowadays, the word pride has acquired a positive connotation. That means there are hotels by the name Hotel Pride or Hotel Executive Pride. So, if a sports match is going on, say a cricket match is going on, a team has lost the series, but there's still a match remaining, then they say, we are going to play for pride. It means we don't want to be having lost all the matches. At least some matches we will win. So, pride is considered in today's world not a negative mood, not a negative idea. So, some devotees who write books for contemporary audiences, so instead of pride, for mother, they often translate it as arrogance. I have not seen anywhere else, anywhere in the world, called hotel arrogance. Arrogance is still considered to be bad. So we could say on a continuum, there is pride, there is arrogance, and there is honor. The sense of honor is considered to be affirmative. That means the sense of honor makes us act honorably. So when some devotees broke the regulative principles while practicing bhakti, and they wrote to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada then writes back. He says, don't you have a sense of honor? He says, you took this vow in front of the deities, in front of the spiritual master. How could you break this vow? Don't you have a sense of honor? So honor in this sense, when we respect ourselves, not in an egoistic sense, but when we respect ourselves, then we take our word seriously. If we make a commitment, we will strive to do our best to keep it. So the word honor has a positive connotation. The word arrogance has a negative connotation. Now pride can sometimes refer to arrogance, it can sometimes refer to honor. So we have to see in context what it refers to. So when the word pride is used as one of the six anarthas, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada and matsarya, then it is used there, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion and pride. So there the word pride has the negative connotation associated with arrogance. And when it is used in the sense of, when it says we'll play for pride, that means we'll play for honor. It's used in that sense over there. So what exactly do we mean by arrogance? I'll use the word arrogance instead of pride in this session for the remaining part. So arrogance essentially means to think that we are independent, we are special, we are superior to others. Now all of us do have some free will, and all of us have been given some special abilities by Krishna. So, but our independence is tiny. We have some free will. We're not completely independent. We are special in the sense that each one of us can have an individual relationship with Krishna. We are individuals. But there are two distinct things, speciality and superiority. So if our sense of speciality gives us a sense of superiority, I am better than others, then that sense of superiority over others is what makes us arrogant. To acknowledge that, okay, I have some talents, that's not necessarily arrogance. To acknowledge that we have certain resources, that's not necessarily arrogance. But to parade those resources, to parade those gifts, and to demand respect from others, because demand subordination from others, to demand servility from others because of these gifts, that is arrogance. So now, what was the arrogance which the gopis exhibited over here? Oh, we are so special that Krishna is attracted to us and Krishna is with us. So each gopi felt like that. And that, now the gopis are definitely special. The Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas have described elaborately how the gopis are the topmost devotees. And among the gopis, Radharani is the top supreme devotee. While describing this also, that the gopis are special. But there is, as I said, there's a difference between speciality and superiority. What makes us special is that Krishna has given us certain gifts by which we can make some special contribution. But when we start thinking that these are not gifts, but these are my possessions, and they make me better than others, and we start looking down on others, that is when it becomes arrogance. And that alienates Krishna. Now, arrogance has two different effects. One is that it alienates people, because nobody likes a person who is too full of themselves. We may work with a person like that if it's like it's what our job requires or our service requires. But it's not pleasant working with somebody who is very full of themselves. Along with that, ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodham ti samshrita mam atma paradeheshu pradvishinto abhyasuyakaha. In the 16th chapter, when Krishna is talking about the demonic nature, at that time he says that those who are of a demoniac disposition, they take shelter of their ego. So taking shelter of Krishna, ahankaram dalam balam darpam kamam krodham cha samshritaha. They take shelter of their ego. And then by the taking of the shelter of the ego, what happens? Mam atma paradeheshu pradvishanto abhyasuyaka. They become envious of me, who is present in their own hearts and the hearts of other living beings. So basically, the sense of superiority over others, we may not think that I am superior to God, but we do think that I don't need God really. I don't need God. I can do what I want to do when I want to do it. So that sense of independent doership, which creates a sense of superiority over others, that can alienate people from us, and that can alienate Krishna also from us. And that is demonstrated in a graphic way, that even for devotees as great as the gopis, if they become arrogant, if they start feeling that I'm special, and not just I'm special, but my speciality makes me superior. So all the gopis who thought that Krishna, that we are so special, that Krishna is with me only, then Krishna disappeared from those gopis. So how arrogance alienates the absolute is demonstrated graphically in this pastime. And this is such a fundamental teaching of bhakti, fundamental principle of bhakti, that it is demonstrated by Krishna, or it is demonstrated in the Bhagavatam through the medium of the topmost pastime of Krishna, through the medium of the interaction between the topmost devotees of Krishna, with Krishna. Now, applying this point of arrogance to our level of action. Yesterday I talked about how we have aparadharma and we have paradharma. Aparadharma is our worldly duties. They are duties which are meant or which are necessary for maintaining order in the world. And paradharma is the duties that help us to rise beyond this world and to attain Krishna. The aparadharma can also help us to raise our consciousness. But that is very gradual. Paradharma helps us to raise our consciousness quite rapidly. And we discuss some situations when the aparadharma and paradharma can be in tension. Is this to be done or is that to be done? So the opposite of arrogance, we could say, is humility. And humility is expressed through what? Humility is expressed through service, and more practically through service attitude. There are many virtues which remain abstract unless we act on them. For example, if we say that somebody wants to develop sensitivity. Sensitivity is a virtue. But how is sensitivity expressed? It is through gentle, affirmative speech. Gentle, kind, affirmative speech. So there is a virtue and there is an expression of the virtue. So similarly, if we consider humility, the opposite of arrogance, that is expressed through a service attitude. And the very nature of a service or a service attitude is that it gets us out of ourselves. Normally, we keep thinking of ourselves, I like this, I want this, I want to do this. And we act accordingly. But the more we get out of ourselves, the more we grow spiritually. So one way of looking at it might be that, say, aparadharma and paradharma pull us in different directions. Aparadharma pulls us towards the world, paradharma pulls us towards Krishna. And thus, we get pulled in different directions. Another way of looking at it is that both aparadharma and paradharma pull us out of ourselves, pull us out of self-centeredness. So even our aparadharma, our worldly duties, they actually pull us out of ourselves. When say parents have children, then at that time, when the parents are just a couple, at that time they might just travel wherever they want, they enjoy whatever way they want. They can do so many things. But when they have a child, they have to think of the child first. Okay. They have to put the child first. And then it is said that parents beget children, parents make children, and then children make parents. That means children force the parents to become responsible. Children force the parents to come out of their own selves and to think of others. So every duty that we have, every aparadharma, actually forces us to come out of ourselves. So if we consider kula dharma is the dynastic duty. So that forces people to come out of themselves. Oh, I can't just think of myself. What about my brother? What about my sister? What about my extended family? We think about them. And that's how we come out of ourselves. So if we consider duty to the nation, there are many people who are patriotic. As I said, the words often have connotations. So there are two words, there is patriotism and there is nationalism. In today's intellectual discourse, the word nationalism has acquired a negative connotation. Nationalism means, you know, I want the good of my nation at the cost of other nations. So you care for the land so much that we stop caring for the people in the land. That we just become dehumanized almost. So nationalistic people can become aggressive, violent towards others. But patriotism, the word has a positive connotation. So when a person is patriotic, if you look at the independence struggles of various countries, often people who fought and laid down their lives, They are considered great heroes. And yes, there is a certain amount of glorious selflessness in laying down their life for the sake of something bigger than oneself, for a kingdom. The Indian patriotic leader during the when India was about to get independence or was struggling to get independence, he called upon the Indians and he said that, I will give you independence, and in exchange I want something from you. He says, I want your sweat, your toil and your blood. You give me your blood and I will give you independence. And thousands of people became galvanized to do that. There was an American patriot who said, the only regret of my life is that I have only one life to serve America. Now, of course, he was within a materialistic conception, so he thought one life is all that we have. But I have only one life to serve America. These are exalted sentiments, in a sense that there's a very high level of dedication that is exhibited over there. How, even if we talk about Krishna Bhakti being the highest, how many of us will be ready to give up our blood for the sake of serving Krishna? How many of us feel, oh, I have only one life to serve Krishna? We want to feel, oh, I want this life to get over, I want to go to Krishna and get out of this distressful world. So often, the aparadharma can also force people to come out of themselves. And in that sense, if we consider the common element that unites aparadharma and paradharma is a displacement from self-centeredness. It is pulling a person out of oneself. And when we are pulled out of ourselves, how far are we pulled out? Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion introduction talks about how there can be extended circles. So from thinking of myself alone, I start thinking of my partner, my spouse. That is, I'm coming out of myself. From there, if I start thinking about my children, I'm further coming out of myself. From there, I start thinking about my dynasty. I'm coming further out of myself. From there, I start thinking about my nation, my country. I'm coming further out of myself. And I'm thinking of something beyond myself. And these are all extended circles, we could say. And Prabhupada says the biggest extension of the circle is Krishna. Because Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is the well-wisher of everyone. By serving Krishna, we can do good to everyone. Just as when we water the root of the tree, all the branches automatically get watered. So that selflessness attains its summit when that selflessness is offered to Krishna. So aparadharma and paradharma can be seen not as contradictory but as complementary if we see that the purpose is to evolve from self-centeredness to selflessness. In today's world, where we have a culture of individualism, not just individualism, but we have often obsessive individualism. So we could say selfishness means I first, but we could have obsessive selfishness as I only. Selfishness is something which we cannot entirely give up. The word selfish has a negative connotation. Why are you so selfish? You're thinking only about yourself, not thinking about anyone else. Generally, the word selfish is considered to be quite a insulting or a judgmental word. Oh, how dare you call me selfish? Nobody will take the charge. Oh, you are so selfish, very passively. Why do you call me selfish? Feel hurt by that. So, in a sense, nobody can give up selfishness. But the word selfishness, when it is used, it's used in the sense that you care only for yourself without caring for anyone else. We are individuals, so there is individuality and there is individualism. Individuality is something which can't be given up. Each one of us is an individual. And naturally we will look at the world in terms of our interests, our talents, our gifts. We all bring a unique perspective to the world, into how we look at it, and we all can make a distinctive contribution in the world. So being selfless doesn't mean giving up our individuality itself. There is individuality which is natural, essential, which is innate to us. But individualism refers to thinking about oneself without thinking about anyone else. We will naturally think about ourselves. We can't not think about ourselves. But when we think about ourselves in relationship with others, okay, this is what I want to do, but how is this going to affect others? And then, do I still want to do this? Or how can I do this in a way that doesn't affect others negatively? When we think about others, that is where the selflessness means. We start understanding that I am a part of a unit. I am not alone. I am not isolated. I'm a part of a whole. I'm a unit, but I'm a part of a whole. And that whole can refer to a family, that whole can refer to a dynasty, that whole can refer to a nation, and ultimately that whole can refer to the supreme divinity, Krishna. So when the Bhagavatam talks about swartha, swartha is selfishness. And that is considered to be negative. But the Bhagavatam also uses the word swartha in a positive sense. In Prahlad Maharaj's section, it is said, Nates viduhu swartha gatim hi Vishnu durashaya ye bahir arthamanina andayathandhair upadhiyamana tepi ishtantriyam urdam nibaddha. So he says that, oh, the materialistic people, the demoniac people, they do not understand Nate viduhu, they don't understand swartha gatim hi Vishnu. That actually our self-interest lies in Vishnu. In loving Vishnu, in serving Vishnu, in him lies our enlightened self-interest. To the extent we understand this, to that extent we ourselves progress towards fully absorbed, consistent, committed devotion to Krishna. So, Nate vidhu swartha gatim hi Vishnu. Not understand that Vishnu is our self-interest. We think our self-interest is in various other things. Oh, my self-interest is in getting this beautiful car. It is in getting this big fancy house. Oh, my self-interest is in forming a relationship with this person. And durashayaye bahir arthamanina. We start thinking that these various external objects are what will bring meaning. They will bring value. They are the purpose of my life. Bahir artha maninaha. When I think like this, then tepi isha tantriyam urdam nibaddha. Those people become bound by the ropes of the law of karma. Isha tantriya. He says that actually, if we do not voluntarily serve Vishnu, then we will involuntarily serve Vishnu. How is that? If a person says that I will not obey the law voluntarily, then they will be put in a jail and they will have to obey the law forcibly. So those who do not voluntarily serve Krishna, understanding that service to him is in my best interest, then they become bound by the Isha Tantra. Now what are the Isha Tantra? It is not just the laws of karma in terms of we may get various kinds of sufferings in our life, but also it means that we get bound by our own desires, our trivial desires. Prabhupada writes in a purport, for those who don't accept Krishna as the Almighty, their senses become Almighty. Their senses become Almighty and they pull them, their mind, their senses, do this, do this, do this, do this. And people just run here and there, trying to gratify their senses. Tepi isha tantriyam urdam nibaddhaha. Andayathandair upaniyamana. So those who tell people that, oh, this will make me happy, this will make you happy, this will make you happy, this is the purpose of your life, this is what you should be aiming for in your life. If people are telling this, and what they're telling, pointing towards is other than Krishna, then such people are like the blind leading the blind. And everybody will be doomed in such a procession. So now, why I was quoted this verse is that we cannot give up selfishness per se. As I said, the word selfishness has a negative connotation. So I talked about two connotations of selfishness. One is individuality, and the second is individualism. Individuality in the sense that we are individuals with our own consciousness. That is something which can't be given up. But individualism means thinking only of ourselves without thinking of others. That is something which can and should be given up. So when the Bhagavatam is using the word Swartha Gatim Hi Vishnu, it's saying that our individuality is best fulfilled through our spirituality. By our spirituality, we understand that we are souls, we are parts of Krishna, and we are meant to serve Him. And for serving Him, whatever is required, we are willing to do that. Whatever is required, whatever it takes. The nature of love is that naturally we expect loving reciprocation, but at the same time, selflessness or selfless service attitude means that we put the contribution before the expectation. In every relationship, there is a reciprocation. Reciprocation means we do something for the other person, and then the other person does something for us. So what we do, we could say, is the contribution. What the other thing person should do, we think that is the expectation from others. So in some relationships, our expectation is very high, whereas contribution is very less. We do very little for the other person, but we demand many things from that other person. But when we have a service attitude, we focus on contribution, not on expectation. And of course, there will be reciprocation. And to have expectations, in a sense, is just being human. But if we have a committed service attitude, then we are not attached to the expectation. We can continue our service even when that expectation is not being fulfilled. And when the service attitude is directed towards others, other living beings, other jivas, then that is aparadharma. When that service attitude is directed towards Krishna, that is paradharma. And when the service attitude is directed towards others through Krishna, then that is where paradharma and aparadharma get united. That means that we serve others now as compared to the mode of ignorance, or the mode of ignorance where somebody is just obsessively individualistic. Where they don't care for their parents, don't care for the family, don't care for anyone else. Just there are so many young people now just spend hours and hours, days after days, just playing some video games, surfing the net, and they don't do anything in life. And especially if one has a little bit of financial security, wherein parents are providing, or the government, the welfare state, which is providing, then people feel no need to come out of their dark rooms in which they are going into, they are spending hours and hours going into an imaginary world through the internet. So there is no ethos of any kind of responsibility at all. That is tamasic. So from tamasic, from the mode of ignorance, one comes towards rajasic. Okay, I want to achieve this. I want to get this job. I want to get this car. I want to have this family. I want to do this. At least one is coming out of the imaginary world to the real world. So rajasic is better than tamasic. But better than rajasic is sattvic. Sattvic, in the mode of goodness, therein one starts thinking, okay, yes, all these material things are fine, but they're temporary. Is there something more to life? One starts pursuing spiritual reality. And one starts pursuing spiritual reality. And when we come to Shuddha Sattva, when we come to Bhakti, at that time we start pursuing the supreme spiritual reality. That is Krishna. So if we consider, this is the circle of our interests. And say this is the circle of the interests of Krishna. So we find out the intersection of the two. And that is where we can steadily serve Krishna. If I do only the things which interest me but which have no connection with bhakti, then I am no longer a devotee. But if I try to do the things which I have no interest in, but I do them simply out of service to Krishna, I can do that for some time, but it's not sustainable for a long time. Because to embrace our spirituality, we do not have to deny our individuality. So each of us can serve Krishna according to our nature, according to our particular situation, psychophysical situation as well as social situation. And so the same principle we apply to others. If you are in a committed relationship with someone, we don't just think about ourselves, we think about others. Okay, this is what I like to do, but this is what this person likes. Then let's find out what we can do together. And sometimes we may do something which we don't like just for the pleasure of the other person. And sometimes the other person may do something which they don't like, but they do it for our pleasure. Now if, I said this is, we are one circle, say another person is another circle and Krishna is a third circle. So the ideal situation is where all these three circles intersect. Then that relationship will bring in the harmony of apara and paradharma. That means, say, whoever the people are in the relationship, both of them are also devoted to Krishna and both of them find some common way in which they can serve Krishna together. And in that way, aparadharma and paradharma get harmonized. When we give up arrogance and we embrace a service attitude centered on selflessness. So in tomorrow's session, I'll talk about the selfless service attitude of the gopis and especially of the topmost gopi, Srimati Radharani. I'll summarize. I spoke today about how aparadharma and paradharma can be harmonized through a service attitude. Started by talking about how in the topmost pastime of the Ras Leela, Krishna goes away from his topmost devotees when they exhibit arrogance. Talked about how the word pride can have a negative connotation. In that sense, the word arrogance is more appropriate. When it has a positive connotation, the word honor is more appropriate. So honor, a sense of honor inspires us to act honorably. Whereas arrogance alienates us from others and alienates us from Krishna. That we are all special, that we are all special is just a fact of life. Each one of us has our own individuality. But when that sense of speciality leads to a sense of superiority towards others and a sense of independence of Krishna, then it becomes harmful. So people today, when they are selfish in the sense of being obsessively self-centered, obsessively individualistic, just don't care for anyone at all, then they sink into themselves. So paradharma takes us towards Krishna, aparadharma takes us towards the world. This way they seem contradictory, but if we see that both of them get us out of ourselves. Aparadharma forces us to think of others in our various relationships. Maybe it is a family, as partner, our children, our dynasty, our country. Talked about how there have been patriots in various countries who selflessly laid down their lives for the sake of the country. So this is an expanded sense of how we can come out of ourselves. And this expansion attains its zenith when it is directed towards Krishna. When we understand that Krishna is the source of everything, Krishna is the supreme well-wisher of everyone, then by serving Krishna, we are watering the root of the tree, and thus everybody will be benefited by that. So for us, when we live in today's obsessively individualistic age, at that time where people tend to live only for themselves, then even aparadharma is important to help us come out of ourselves. Individuality can't be given up, but individualism, in the sense of thinking only of oneself, not considering others, that is something which needs to be given up. So swartha gati, the word selfishness has a negative connotation, but we cannot be completely selfless. What happens is, when we understand that my self-interest, my best self-interest lies in Krishna, is enlightened self-interest, then we become free. To the extent we neglect Krishna, to the extent we don't obey the Almighty, then our mind and senses become almighty and drag us here, there and everywhere. And lastly, I concluded by talking about how when we are practicing bhakti, we may have come from the mode of ignorance, and we need to see how best we can come out of ourselves. So when we are in a relationship with Krishna, then we find out the circle of what interests us and what is Krishna bhakti, and situate ourselves in that intersection. Sometimes we may do things which we don't like also for Krishna's service, but we do it, for sustenance we need to be situated in that intersection. And if we are in relationship with someone, then we find out the intersection of both the interests and we situate ourselves there. So for study, oneness in the relationship. And if all these three circles, our interest, others' interest and Krishna's interest, they come together, then that relationship is where aparadharma and paradharma become harmonized. So arrogance, which takes us away from Krishna, can be removed by a humble service attitude. So by humility is the dormant virtue, and that is actively expressed. It is through service attitude. And service attitude means that we place contribution above expectation. Rather than demanding that the other person do this, do that, or even Krishna do something for us, we focus on contributing from our side in a mood of service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Thank you. So this is 18.16. Svabhava jina kaunteya nibaddha sveina karmana kartum nechasi anmohat karishasya vashopitat. So the Bhagavad Gita says that we are all bound by our nature. So if we don't serve Krishna, then we will be dictated by our nature. Now it's interesting, this verse, Krishna, it is not telling us that we should give up our nature. It is saying that we are bound by our nature, so we need to serve Krishna. That means, what does it mean actually? That our senses, when we say gratifying the senses, it generally refers to fulfilling the trivial desires of the senses. Oh, I want this sense object, I want that. Now that's something which is not so, that is very fleeting pleasures. But then we can also say that all of us have certain interests, certain talents, certain abilities, and that is our nature. So somebody might be good at music, somebody might be good at language, somebody might be good at decoration, somebody might be good at art. Now we could say that this is also, what is it that likes this? It is the mind and the senses. They might say, hey, this art is good, let's put it like this, it will become better. Hey, this is not that good, let's do it like this. So that's pleasing to the eyes. So it's not that we have to reject that. So swabhava is our nature. When Krishna says we are bound by our nature, swabhava jina kaunte nibaddha sveina karmana. So when you are bound by our nature, it means that we cannot arbitrarily reject our nature. So like yesterday I said that we don't live for our desires, we don't live against our desires. We don't work for our desires, we don't work against our desires. We work with our desires for Krishna. And the same principle applies to our nature also. Krishna tells Arjuna that you are trying to act like a Brahmana. Saying, oh, I'll forgive, I'll live like a mendicant, I don't want his kingdom. He says, you are a Kshatriya, you cannot live like a Brahmana. Do your duty as a Kshatriya, but don't be motivated by greed for the kingdom. Do it as a service to me, as a mood of is helping me to establish dharma. So when we understand that our swabhava, our nature, helps can be is something which we just have, and we use it to the best of our capacity for serving Krishna, then we are no longer bound by our nature. Rather, we use our nature to become unbound from our nature. We use our nature to become connected to with Krishna and to ultimately transcend our material nature. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Ram.
Thank you, Prabhu. I have a question. In Nectar Devotion, in the chapter entitled Devotional Qualifications, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that he says vegetarianism and nonviolence are not a qualification for devotional service. So I was thinking about that when you were talking about, you know, things that can help us come out outside of ourselves. I was wondering, again, if you could kind of harmonize that statement with what you were explaining.
Okay, so Prabhupada says vegetarianism and nonviolence are not qualifications for devotional service in act of devotion. So when I said that anything that brings us out of ourselves, that is positive, there are different contexts. If we consider much of our Vedic literature, or much of our Bhakti literature, is spoken to raise people from goodness to pure goodness. If we consider that in all most of the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, if you read, Chaitanya Bhagavat describes how degraded the society was at that time. And what is the parameter for degradation? So today, if you say degraded society, oh, you know, that marriages are falling apart, there is so much premarital, extramarital relationships, there are so many abortions. We'll say that is degradation. But Chaitanya Bhagavat describes what is the degradation? He said, actually, everybody was worshipping the goddess. People were worshipping so many devatas, but nobody was worshipping Krishna. People would chant the Vedic mantras, but they would never chant the names of Krishna. People would speak on the Bhagavatam, but they would not speak on Bhakti. So now, actually, we may say somebody is worshipping the devatas, somebody is worshipping, studying the Bhagavatam, somebody is chanting Vedic mantras. Is that degraded? It's quite elevated, isn't it? In today's world, if we meet somebody who is chanting Vedic shlokas, if you are traveling on distributing books and somebody is chanting Sanskrit shlokas, you're quite impressed. Oh, you know, how do you know this? So, what the Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita, what they're describing is that when people are so caught in the mode of goodness, that they forget that there is something higher. Now, worshipping devatas is definitely better than being atheistic. It is definitely better than being degraded in terms of modes of passion and ignorance. So, if the mode of goodness itself becomes the ultimate standard of progress and success for us, then that is condemned. You have to rise beyond goodness to transcendence. But much of the Bhakti literature, in order to emphasize the glory of Bhakti as being superior even to goodness, it minimizes goodness. But sattva-guna and sattvic life is very important for a balanced existence in this world. And that's why in today, when Prabhupada is saying that non-violence and vegetarianism are not qualifications for devotion, what he means is, don't be stuck with sattva-guna. One of Prabhupada's prominent disciples was Bob Cohen, Brahma Tirtha Prabhu. Prominent in the sense that he had interaction with Prabhupada. His conversation is what is described in the book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. So there Prabhupada tells, he tells Prabhupada, Swamiji, I'm a vegetarian. And Prabhupada says, so what, even monkeys are vegetarians. So Prabhupada, at that time, he seems to say, okay, now you are interacting with me, rise, but vegetarianism is not that good, not all that great, you have to rise higher. But then there's another disciple of Prabhupada, Peter Barwash, who was a well-known tennis player, and he became a tennis coach eventually. So Prabhupada told him that be like a plainclothes devotee and raise people's consciousness so that they can come at least to vegetarianism. Help people to understand, follow the regular principles at the basic level. Teach basic morality. So it will be context dependent. If goodness itself is considered to be the highest goal, then definitely it has to be pointed out that it is not good enough. But at the same time, for people who are in passion and ignorance, goodness is definitely very good. If somebody is already a vegetarian in today's world, especially in the Western world, in India people may be vegetarian because they are just adhering to their tradition. Again, they may not necessarily be spiritual, but they may just be adhering to the tradition. That also requires strength, because in India, the contemporary, it's to be cool means to be non-veg, to eat non-veg. Here, becoming vegan or vegetarian has become quite cool. Still, it's alternative crowd. It's not the mainstream lifestyle. So either way, if somebody is vegetarian, that is laudable. But if somebody thinks that's the perfection of my life, I don't need to do anything more, that is when it is a problem. So the mode of goodness alone does not qualify anyone for devotion. But if somebody starts practicing devotion, if they are already in sattva guna, then it becomes easier for them to practice devotion. If sattva guna makes one complacent, then sattva guna is an obstacle to devotion. But if somebody is seeing sattva guna as a launching pad for bhakti, then sattva guna does make bhakti much easier to practice. Does it answer your question? So thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki cha, Gaura Pramanande Hari Bhava.